Welcome to the Stanley Cup Playoff Report. Here are Dan Rusinowski and Drew Remenda.
The playoffs are underway, and boy, are they intense. San Jose Sharks aren't in, but boy, the Barracuda are having a great first round. It's over. They're moving on to the second round. And we've got some amazing series going on in the National Hockey League, Drew.
Yes, we do. Interesting games yesterday. There were so many things to talk about. It's been a very good first round, like they usually are.
Goaltending extravaganza is certainly part of what's going on in these series, as we saw a couple of goalies get blown out in the Carolina series. Montreal losing their goaltender. Washington, their goaltender getting shaken up. All kinds of stuff going on with the goalies here.
Going to the net hard, and that brings traffic. And sometimes it's friendly fire. Sometimes it's not. It's really interesting after the general managers had their meeting in Florida near the end of the year, a lot was talked about when it came to goalie interference and goals scored or goals disallowed. But what has happened to me looks like, Danny, that they've just decided we're just going to go to the net. You're going to send guys to the net and you're going to have to prevent us from going to the net, or the referees are going to have to call it. And the referees have not been calling a lot of goalie interference, not like when it first started out. So I don't know if there's been a directive handed down to the referees, or the fact that it's, hey, this is playoff hockey. You got to get to the net. You got to get to that area to score.
Also, what always happens, too, is when the Department of Player Safety makes one ruling, say suspending Brendan Hagel for one game, then the next game Tkachuk puts a big hit on, and there's all this discussion. Usually it happens with the team that lost, but even in that case, there was some discussion.
Very interesting. It was a point really well made on the TNT panel after that game. So if people, just to catch them up, Brendan Hagel in game three, hit Alexander Barkov in the corner.
Got him good.
Got him great. Unfortunately, Barkov had never touched the puck and got rocked hard, and it was a high hit. Hagel was given a five-minute major, and he was also suspended for one game, which was game four. In game four, the blowout by the Tampa Bay Lightning, that was it game four? Game four. On a great pass by...
No, it was game three.
Game three, yeah. They're a little bit behind. They're a game behind. So game three, Jake Guentzel makes a pass in the neutral zone I think it was to Cirelli for an empty netter. Beautiful pass. But then, well after he had made the pass...
1,001, 1,002, 1,003, 1,004.
Matthew Tkachuk pops him with a beautiful hit in the neutral zone, right shoulder to chest. Guentzel goes down, bangs his chin off the ice, but he's fine. And the talk was, as Matthew was given a five-minute major, the talk was, well, will he be suspended too? Department of Player Safety said, no, we're not going to suspend him because, one, Guentzel did have the puck, and two, it wasn't as high of a hit. So, as usual, when you have questions regarding NHL decisions, the only thing you end up with is more questions about NHL decisions.
Well, the good thing, I think, is that they're using the five-minute major call to allow themselves to review it. And I think that's been a good thing.
It's been a very good rule.
Even though, if you do too much of that, then it's going to mess around with the continuity of the game.
Yeah, but they've given up on the continuity of the game when they've decided it would take 8 minutes to decide whether a play was onside or offside.
Fair enough. And that's exactly where we are. In fact, John Cooper, the coach of the Tampa Bay Lightning, was asked about the Department of Player Safety and all of the decisions heading into tonight's game number four in Florida.
I don't know if there's a harder job in sports than what they have. You know, to regulate the speed and the physicality of what goes on in these games, maybe football, but football happens, you know, the plays aren't as rapid as they are in hockey, and it's a no-win situation for them, because one fan base is going to be upset about one decision and the other fan base is going to be upset because the decision wasn't strong enough. So it's unfortunately, it's kind of like being a referee. They're the only people in the building that nobody likes, nobody cheers for. And when you, like, you ask me right now what our forecheck is, I can tell you. You ask me right now to go and determine what goes on in one of these hits and how it should be judged, I can't. I don't see them enough. These guys are schooled on it. They know they know exactly, you know, the department knows exactly what they're doing. And so for me to sit here and say, to judge them, I can't judge them. They know what they're doing. I don't in that regard. And so you accept their decision and move on and trust that the right one is being made, because they're not cheering for anybody. They're cheering for the game to be played properly, and how they see fit is probably, you know, what should have happened, regardless of what everybody, you know, feels about it. So you just move on. That's it.
That's John Cooper, the head coach of the Tampa Bay Lightning, heading into tonight's game number four. And after that speech, I think I'm inclined to vote for him for governor of the state.
Excuse me. First off, one of two lawyers behind NHL benches, the other one being Pete DeBoer. Second, that was a great lesson in making sure you didn't do anything to put your team in a negative light or you in a negative light next call you want going your way. Do you remember when, I know you do, when the Sharks were playing the Vancouver Canucks and they had them 0-3 and Kevin Bieksa, who was playing for the Canucks at the time, came out and called Joe Thornton, Logan Couture divers before the game, before game four. And didn't do it once. He did it twice on two different separate media scrums. Todd McClellan was later asked after the morning skate about that, that Bieksa calling out Logan and calling out Joe and calling out the referees. And
Ryan Kessler was involved in that too, wasn't he?
I don't know if Kessler was, but I remember that certainly it was Bieksa making the big headlines about
right,
it.
Right.
Todd was asked about that after the morning skate in the media scrum, and Todd gave a masterclass on saying, well, basically what John Cooper said. She said, if anybody, I'm not sure if Joe or Logan would be upset, and I'm paraphrasing. He said, but if I was the referees and I was getting called out and singled out like Kevin Bieksa did with the referees, then I'd be probably a little bit upset, and then that would bother me as an official. And then that was a class on, one, deflecting the whole situation, but two, putting it back on to the Vancouver Canucks and the league. And what happened in game four?
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Kevin Bieksa takes a penalty on Logan Couture.
El Sweepo.
The Sharks score, tie it up, then win it in overtime by a great play by Joe Thornton and Patty Marleau. I think it's a masterclass by John Cooper to go, hey, these are difficult jobs. I'm glad he didn't say a hard job. Hard jobs, digging ditches. Hard jobs is working the highways, farming, you know, oil.
Being in the infantry.
Yeah, being in the infantry. Those are hard jobs. It's a difficult job. It's a complicated job. I was glad he did it.
Yeah, well, it really was fascinating. And, of course, he had a little time to kind of get over what happened the last game, because at the end of the game, following the Hagel suspension, here's what he said.
The only players we hit are the ones with pucks.
So that was his comment after that situation happened. And, of course, Paul Maurice, the head coach of the Florida Panthers, had to react to some of the stuff that Cooper was saying. And he was asked by the media, well, what's the deal with some of the things that John has said about you, too?
I saw it. I'm at home watching the Senators game, and he chirped me, right? Which I appreciate. He used my own words on me, too. I mean, I'm not sure it was applicable to the events on the ice, but it was still good. Well done.
I love Paul Maurice.
He's
so
a beauty,
much.
Isn't he?
He's a beauty, and he's, you know, he's coached as many games as he had. He's a head coach in the National Hockey League, 29 years old. He has coached so many games, and he's gone through it all. And we get a chance to talk to him. He's just a wonderful human being. The great part about it is when Paul doesn't get rattled. He doesn't get upset.
Well, it's because he coached in Toronto.
Yeah, coached
so
in Toronto.
So nothing rattles
and
him.
Winnipeg and a few other places. But, yeah, it's fantastic back and forth.
Well, it was fabulous, and we got some more back and forth between these two coaches we want to share with you. First thing, the reaction from John Cooper about his team being down 2-0 and what was going on in the dressing room at that point to get them back into a victory.
You would have never known, sitting in the locker room after game two, that we were down 0-2. And so, riding into this game, wasn't going to guarantee the result, but I knew damn well how the effort was going to be, and they delivered.
Well, they did deliver with that big victory in game number three, and now Paul Maurice, the head coach of the Panthers, talking about how the road team has been the winner in all these games in the series. He discussed recovering from the loss.
Paul, two different ideas. The first would be
you would have all, it seems you always learn so much more when you lose a game of both places that you got to get better. And that's just a really key piece of giving yourself a chance to win in the series. Like we would say that, that as you learn in each series, as you grow, you get to keep all of that, and then it adds to your game. Hopefully you can win it and get to use that good stuff. So as far as adjustments we'll make, we'll just usually go through the game once from a team point of view, and then the afternoon I'll take, and if there's somebody I'm worried about or somebody, I'll watch their shifts real close and then make the decisions. That then there's always the health stuff.
Smart. The one thing that you look for is your players. Are they doing what we want them to do as a five-man group? And then you break it down individually. Are the individuals doing what we want them to do? Is there a little bit more that so-and-so can give? Or is a little bit, do I need to back a guy off a little bit? Is he just trying to do too much as far as cheat offensively to get a chance instead of just doing the right thing defensively and let it all work out? Are they working together? So those little things are the things you're looking at. I mean, is a defenseman boxing out? Those are the details you start looking at.
Meanwhile, Yanni Gourde says that the Lightning are gaining in confidence by generating those five goals in the last game on the ice.
Yeah, we felt pretty good with our game last game. There's always going to be some stuff that we want to get better at. And, yeah, we're excited for the game tonight. And we're confident. We're confident in our ability, and we have been since the beginning of the series.
Well, that's a great series. It's ongoing, and you have to manage the ebbs and the flows in a series no matter what happens. And I think Paul Maurice is one of the best people to talk about that.
Handling your day. So you like a lot of emotion in each game, right? Everybody's wired up, and then the next day it's over, and you want to deal with it. And move past it. And that's wins probably even more than losses. The losses, you'll have everybody's eyes on the video and everybody really focused on it. And then when the wins, you're in too good a mood sometimes to take stock of the video. So you just handle your day, get your day done. It's a recovery day for us. We went through the game. And then you want to be able to reset, take what you've learned, but then get right back to where you started.
And so that sets things up for a fascinating game number four. That'll be in South Florida. And again, the road team has won all the games so far.
It's interesting how the home rinks don't really influence at least the first round. Maybe is it, well, except for the Los Angeles Kings. But when you look at the way that the game's played now and how these teams are so familiar with each other because they play each other so often, that teams don't get out of sorts when it comes to a Florida series. It's not a big issue. And even in Toronto Senator series, so many Toronto Maple Leaf fans travel. It doesn't seem to be an issue for the teams these days.
We continue now with the Sharks playoff report on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.
From one game four to another, we go from Tampa and Florida to Colorado against Dallas. And what an emotional scene for the Colorado Avalanche as Gabriel Landeskog comes back to action, throws a hit on his first shift, gets the crowd rocking and rolling in Denver, and then, of course, scoring his first goal in 3 years, which is just an incredible testimony to exactly what this man has gone through to play. And I just can't believe it.
Remember last year, near the end of the year when Colorado was here, and he tried to skate, and we watched him. You and I were standing there watching him.
I remember.
Yeah, he could hardly move. He could hardly move. And to see, and that he was already a year into, or 2 years into his rehab and his problems with his knee. What an accomplishment to be able to come back, play, and play well. That's the great part about it. He's not out there as a charity case because he's not out there as sentimentality. He's out there because he can play.
He made Brock Nelson better.
Yes, by far.
And those guys now have great chemistry. But boy, I thought Landeskog made him better and made the entire team better.
Uh-huh.
And Nathan MacKinnon, who's the best player on the team, thought so too.
It's amazing how quickly he's picked up. Like it's crazy. It's honestly, it's beyond all of our expectations. He told me, he said, like, I don't think there's a difference between, I kind of was laughing in my head, but he was like, I don't think there's a difference between a month off or 3 years off. And I was thinking like, whatever, you know, I was like, okay, but he was right, you know, he looks like he's been out for 4 weeks. So, just shows you, his, you know,
his story. Everyone's seen it, I guess. How hard he's worked, and it just shows you if you're good at hockey, you're good at hockey. You know, you can come back, and he's one of our best players out there. It's amazing, and we missed him.
MacKinnon wanted to speak more about it too, from a personal standpoint, because he and Landeskog are the best of friends.
Yeah, we're very close. I'm at his house almost every day. It was just kind of more than just a playoff goal. I think it was a life goal, or it meant a lot to all of us for him to score a goal, and then had an assist, and was just awesome out there. So it means a ton to us for him to score that goal at home. That was so cool.
That's one of the quotes of the playoffs so far.
Absolutely. And you and I love Peter DeBoer at Steve Spott. It's a great organization, the Dallas Stars, so many good players. It is hard not to cheer for Gabriel Landeskog and Mackenzie Blackwood. It really is. This is a series that no matter who wins it, I'm going to be cheering for them.
Well, and Cale Makar, you throw him in there, and my perspective is it reminds me of when I was growing up. I really loved the New York Rangers growing up just outside of New York City in Connecticut. And they played the Boston Bruins in the final, and they lost. And the reason why they lost was because the Bruins had Bobby Orr, mm-hmm. and the Rangers didn't. And my memory was, gosh, I really can't stand that Bobby Orr is so good, but boy, I really respect him.
Yeah.
And that's how you feel about Colorado. You get upset about the rivalry sometimes, but you really have to respect people like Makar and MacKinnon and Blackwood, of course, whom we know and love.
Yep, it's been a terrific series, and the side stories are fantastic. But to me, it's been the best series to watch. It's been the most fun, the most competitive, the most two even teams in the first round.
It is interesting, but it's hard to pick the best series because so many are so good. By the way, I want to go to Gabriel Landeskog after the game because after MacKinnon said that,
yeah,
they went to him and said, what do you think about what he said?
It means a lot. Obviously, I've envisioned scoring again for a long time. And then there were obviously days where I didn't know if I was ever going to get to score again. So obviously it feels good, and it's a tight playoff series, and in a big game here at home, get to do it in front of our fans obviously means a lot. So super exciting. Hopefully more to come.
Of course, if that's going to happen, Dallas is under pressure simply because of the Avalanche coming up with the victory. Head coach Pete DeBoer was asked any surprises in this series so far, and he basically said, not really.
You know what? I think if you had told me at Christmas we were going to go into the first round of the playoffs against Colorado with, you know, their team, and we were going to be without Heiskanen and Robertson, and we'd be 2-2 coming home, you know, with home ice advantage, you know, I think I would have been pretty happy with that. So, you know, I think sometimes you have to have that perspective that, you know, this group's battled pretty hard under some pretty serious adversity, and we're in a pretty good spot.
Pete DeBoer talking about Game 5 tonight between the Avalanche and the Dallas Stars. And, you know, it's really interesting. Like, we had that little repartee between Paul Maurice and John Cooper, and now Pete DeBoer is putting in his 2 cents.
Yeah. I love Pete DeBoer. One of my biggest regrets in broadcasting is not being here when he was here, because I have a ton of respect for Pete and Steve Spott. They do a fantastic job. As Joe Thornton said, Pete DeBoer, you're the man in his retirement, and he is. I love the fact of how he coaches. I love that he gets the most out of each guy. And the other thing, too, when we talk about Landeskog, you can also throw it over to the Dallas Stars and Tyler Seguin coming back and scoring an overtime.
Incredible.
And scoring an overtime goal, assisted by Rantanen and the Marchman. All three of those guys going through what they've had to go through in the last number of years. That was a pretty neat in Game 3.
All fascinating times in the National Hockey League.
We continue now with the Sharks playoff report on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.
After talking about those two series, where do we go next? Well, I think we have to stay in the Western Conference and talk about Los Angeles and Edmonton. What an amazing game that was played in Edmontonia, as I like to call it. I still can't believe that the Oilers figured out a way to do it, but L.A. kind of let them back
yes.
in.
Yes. Danny?
Twice.
Three times in four games, really, when you look at game one. So with 16:34 left to go in the third period yesterday, I looked at my lovely wife and I said, Oilers are going to win this game. They're down 3-1 at the time, so the Oilers are going to win this game. I can't believe that a team as many points and as good of players and as smart as coaching staff as the Los Angeles Kings have, that they once again went into that, well, they go 1-2-2, but it ends up being a 1-4 on their neutral zone. And then all they did the whole night in the third period was just flip the puck out, flip the puck out. Why do you want to give Connor McDavid all that room and his team all that room? I've got no idea. You know, in that game, the Oilers attempted over 100 shots. 43 got on net.
It's way too many.
43 got on net. The rest were blocked or missed. So what does that tell you? Defensive zone faceoffs. 39 defensive zone faceoffs for the LA Kings. 19 for the Edmonton Oilers. What does that tell you? That was one of the dumbest third periods I've seen a team play in a long time because they didn't do anything. They sat back and they let the McDavid-led Oilers back into the game and into the series. You've got the 3-1 lead going in the third. In the first game, you screwed that up as well with the big lead because you sat back. The second game, it didn't matter. The third game, you did it again. And the fourth game, you did it. You can't seem to figure out that 1-4, you've got it, or that 1-2-2, it becomes a 1-4.
It's a 1-4 when you got the lead.
Right. But you don't do, the key to the game is take away time and space.
Neutral zone. You got to stop them before they get to the red line.
Exactly. And they just, and not only that, their defensive zone play was just horrid. They lost every battle there was.
But you know what was good? Darcy Kemper.
Darcy Kemper was great.
Finalist for the Vezina Trophy.
Yep.
It was announced just today, in fact.
What, he stopped 21 in the overtime? 20 or 20?
Just listen to this. Okay. Here's what happened in the overtime. They've come back and tied the game with the extra attacker on, which is enough to drive you crazy.
Byfield.
Right.
Get the puck out, man. There's no excuse. Rick Bonus said it on the TNT panel.
Yeah.
There's 100% that puck's got to go out.
And then here's what happened in overtime. By the time this happened, I said, Edmonton's got the puck in the offensive zone way too much.
Yep.
LA's in trouble in this game. And they got in trouble pretty quickly in OT. And listen to how many chances Connor McDavid had. Here's number one.
Oilers make a quick change. Wallman on the left to McDavid into the King zone. The shot pad save made by Kemper. And the puck on the right wing to center ice is Deneau. Deneau with a shot. The save made by Pickard. He'll hold on.
Pickard made the save there after the good chance for McDavid. Then Connor did it again.
Out through the middle, Drysdale. He's got McDavid down the right wing to McDavid. A backhand stick save by Kemper.
So Kemper's holding him in after two big chances, but there was another chance for McDavid.
To McDavid, gathers speed. He's into the King zone through the middle. The shot, the save made by Kemper.
Well, you think that's good? How about the fourth chance for McDavid in overtime?
Gets into the right wing corner and McDavid steals it. He'll go in behind the net. He'll wrap it around off the stick of Kemper. And out with it is Kempe. And it's Kempe down the left wing.
So Kempe got out of the zone on that one, but McDavid had yet a fifth chance in OT.
Kulak stops along the left wing boards. Into the corner centering pass. Here's McDavid. Saved by Kemper. And he covers it up. Connor Brown got it to McDavid in front of the net. Another glorious chance for Edmonton.
And so it was still tied in overtime, but boy, the Oilers were buzzing as you would expect. The Kings were really back on their heels, and Kemper was the reason why it didn't end early. But finally, then, a penalty was called against the LA Kings in overtime.
Gavrikov
for tripping with only 2.5 left to go in the period. And at that point, it was time for Leon to get larger.
McDavid to Drysdale, right corner. Drysdale to Nugent Hopkins. Side of the net, McDavid in front of the goal. Loose puck. Scores! Leon Drysdale! And the Oilers win it 4-3 in overtime. And they have tied this series at 2 games apiece.
Well, that's Oiler Radio right there for you. They were really thrilled, and of course everybody was in Edmonton, but now this series will shift back to Los Angeles, where the Kings have been one of the top home teams in the NHL all season long. They're going to have to rely on that. What's concerning to me, though, about this, Drew, is the Edmonton Oilers have found cracks in the armor, and this reminds me so much of when the Sharks had a 2-0 lead against Edmonton back in 06. They didn't make certain adjustments, and the Oilers won 4 straight. That's what the danger is here coming up.
Oh, without a doubt. But we talked about this last time when we were talking about which teams who were down 2-0 do you think had a better chance of coming back? And the two teams we talked about were the Edmonton Oilers and the St. Louis Blues. The reason is because, well, even though I think the Kings are a better team than they were the last three seasons going into their fourth go-round against the Edmonton Oilers, they, in these four games, haven't looked like they believe they're better, especially with the way they played their third periods. And then we'll get to St. Louis, I know. But let me ask you a question, though, because watching the games on television, when it comes to watching Toronto, Montreal, Winnipeg, and Edmonton. Every time they score, do I have to get the shot from outside with all the fans standing on the street jumping up and down? Do I need to see that every single time?
Not particularly. No. Well, back in the old days, they would always go to the coach that gave up the goal.
Yeah, yeah.
So now they're going outside.
Now they're going outside to the people who didn't get into the rink. Do I have to see that every time from every friggin' director on TV?
No, you don't.
Okay, thank you very much, because I thought it was me.
No, it's not you. And what also is not you is the way that that series is going. Montreal and Washington, I'm giving the Canadians all sorts of credit for the way they're playing. They were giving it their absolute best. And they don't have as much nearly as Washington does. But give them a big tip of the hockey helmet.
Absolutely. They're up against a bigger, heavier, stronger team.
By the way,
yeah.
How about the fact that you've got Caulfield and you've got Demidov and you've got Suzuki? And they're making plays in the playoffs, and they're having some success. And I'm thinking, as I'm watching this, I'm thinking, okay, in a year or two, Celebrini, Smith.
It's funny you say
that. This is where it's going.
It's funny you say that, because I was thinking the same thing. And, you know, that series could very well be tied if it wasn't for Tom Wilson and a major league hit and a goal right after. That was what changed the series. Changed the game. Don't know if it changed the series. It certainly took the series from being 2-2 to 3-2. 3-1.
And here is how it happened.
Back now to center for Oliver Kapanen. Big hit from Wilson as Carrier got belted as he got rid of the puck, and he's slow to get up. Wilson lined him up.
Clean good hit, too.
Puck was there, clean hit. Carrier picks himself up and gets him to the bench. Here's Duhaime down, and they score! The puck comes into the goal crease and is tapped in past Dobesh, and the Capitals have tied it with 13:21 to go here in regulation. Duhaime started it, and McMichael looked to finish it. It is 2-2 as Duhaime, oh, maybe Brandon did get it.
He did get it, and he gets credit for the goal. He got an empty netter a little later. Great series. Looks like Washington's probably going to win it, but again, all the credit in the world to Montreal. Now, how about Carolina, New Jersey? The Timo Meier running into the goalie scenario. No penalty on the play. Everybody's all a flutter about that. But then Kochetkov came in and played pretty well after that, and Brent Burns got his first goal, as it turned out, in the playoffs.
It's been a while for Burnsy to get a playoff goal. The Carolina Hurricanes just a better team. Just simple as that. They're just a better team. And it has been interesting watching that series, though, because I'm giving Jersey a ton of credit, because they play a hard game, and they found their legs. They're missing both Hughes boys? They are.
They're both out.
They're both out, right. So they're missing both Hughes.
And Brendan Dillon's out.
That puts a big, big weak chain on them, because those three guys are so important. But just, you've got a better team in Carolina. I think they're going to dominate that. They're going to win that series.
Well, that's the National Hockey League. Let's finish up in the final minute of the show about the AHL San Jose Barracuda, who sweep the Ontario Reign. They didn't have to go to the city of Ontario for the games. They won both games at Crypto.com Arena. Drew Amenda and Nick Nolenberger had their credentials all straightened out for game number 2. And now it's the Colorado Eagles, and the first two games will be Friday and Sunday at TechCU Arena. It's a 2-3 series. That's how the AHL does it. Best of 5. I'm really excited to see how Askarov continues to play. He's been great. I think that the young guys on the team have been doing a fantastic job. And how about Colin Graf, series winner?
Terrific job. I like the play that Ethan Cardwell made on that, too. Used his feet, and Colin Graf has been so good. But Yaroslav Askarov won that game for them. Danny, I'm so excited about next year. I'm very intrigued and optimistic. You're seeing Yaroslav Askarov become the Sharks goalie.
It's going to be fascinating, and the playoffs are great too. Make sure you check it out, and thanks for joining us today.
You've been listening to the Stanley Cup Playoff Report. This has been a presentation of the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.